Hello, I'm Mike Steiner. Do I know my own name? Maybe I need some help. My name is Mark Steiner, and welcome this evening. It's good to have you all with us. We are going to explore the issue of mental health and the difficulty people have in getting mental health services in our communities. I mentioned earlier one of the things that inspired this show, unfortunately, was the arrest of two people in the last couple of weeks for murder in this city. Artisha Holt was a 14-year-old girl who walked up to two men, had an interaction with them, and shot and killed one of those men and badly wounded the other. Previous to that, we had stories about a man who was Latino, who was mistaken as a Mexican, who was beaten to death, and the man who was arrested for that death was a man who was diagnosed previously with schizophrenia. His name was Jermaine Holly. And in both cases, the parents of these young people attempted to get them help, couldn't find them help, couldn't get assistance from the state or city agencies that they went to, could not get assistance where they attempted to have their family members taken care of. So we decided, let's talk a bit about that. These murders were heinous, they were shocking and numbing to those of us who heard about them, obviously. But let's talk about the people who committed these murders for a while and think about how that might have been avoided had we had a system to intervene in these people's lives early. We have with us once again here to talk about that Dr. Grady Dale, who is a clinical psychologist, executive director of Urban Psychological Services, and has dedicated his work in life to working with the psychological needs of those who often can't afford health services. It's always a pleasure to have him in the studio. We're also joined by Steve Johnson, Associate Director of Adult Services Division of the Baltimore Mental Health Systems, and Angela Lee, who's Director of the Baltimore City Office of the Maryland Coalition of Families for Maryland for Children's Mental Health. And it's good to have you all with us. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And join us here at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888, we'd like to hear your thoughts about this, your own stories in your own families, people you've heard about, your experiences with attempting to hearing stories about your own families or others attempting to get mental health services. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You know, before we went on the air, I started talking about, you know, where all this began. It began in lots of places, but for a long time, our state mental health institutions were in bad shape and didn't really – people yelled and screamed about not serving the needs of those who were in those hospitals. And this whole movement began to kind of deinstitutionalize the mentally ill. The mentally ill have rights and they should be out. The others were saying that these hospitals are costing too much money. It's also a cost-saving device. Well, President Carter signed the Mental Health Systems Act of 1980, and then Ronald Reagan became president, and he gutted the act. So we have the deinstitutionalization of the mentally ill, but community mental health services didn't follow. So we have this crisis in questions of access to mental health. And I'd like to have – that's where we'll begin this conversation. I mean, I wonder what you thought, Grady Dale, when you read these stories in the news about these two people who were who've been accused of these murders, both seeking mental health care and not being able to receive it.
Well, I can say that it's very, very important to talk about juveniles in the system versus adults in the system.
I'm sorry, Greg. We're going to have to see if we can get this microphone here to.
Is that better?
I apologize.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry.
No, it's not your fault.
Okay. It's important to talk about juveniles. You're quite correct that mental health took some real hits, especially back in the 1980s. And I must say to you that overall, during that time, and even to some extent up to the present day, juveniles have been a subset of this that have been in part neglected because we tended to not think of juveniles in the same way that we've thought about adults. The 14-year-old was a young lady who had some severe psychosocial problems as well as psychological problems. And when you have a child like that, you have real heavy-duty family problems as well as emotional problems. And so it's not just a mental health issue. We look at it overall, and it's important to keep that within the in the context of the overall picture of this young lady and children like that. And she's a 14-year-old, and I call her a child. And mental health has to come to grips with working with other systems. Some of my colleagues who are here are going to talk about that more. We have to work in conjunction with other people and other systems in order to help adolescents like this. And you're right. This is as far as I'm concerned, this is a crisis. And it's a crisis not only of mental health, but it's a crisis of coordination with agencies. It has been for some time, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, other guests come into this conversation, Steve Johnson and Angela Lee. I mean, when you read that both the parents of these young people, 119, 114, attempted to get services and couldn't get them, and you both are involved in that directly or indirectly, mm-hmm. How do you respond to that? What were your thoughts about that?
Well,
Angela.
Excuse me. One thought that I had was piggybacking on what Dr. Grady Dale said, that it's not only a problem of that young person, but it's a family problem, so to speak, and the whole entire family needs support. And a lot of times as family members, we know our kids better than anybody. And the family they're walking with this child from birth to whatever age. And a lot of times we come up against various systems and we feel like we get doors shut in our face. And that's where we really need a one-on-one peer support persons that can walk the walk with that family and assist them in getting the services that they need. And I really feel like, I can feel those families totally. I work with families like the two that were mentioned. I've been doing it for over 15 years, and I just see how families are so tired, and they're seeking help, and they're going to and fro trying to get help, and it's just so important for them to reach out, if possible, to someone, maybe an advocacy program or a family navigator, someone that can really assist them in walking it, and sometimes just taking the burden off of them, because when you're really tired, it's hard to continue when you feel like you're getting doors shut in your face time and time again, and they just really need some support, someone that's willing to walk side by side with them.
Stephen?
I really have a similar point of view. I feel that the mental health system is in a process of significant change where we're starting to realize that we need to be more in collaboration with the people that we serve and their families and their communities. Instead of really thinking that we have all the answers, that we really need to reach into communities and collaborate with communities and come up with answers together. And that's really the bridge to really helping people feel like if they reach out for services, that those services will really meet their needs and wants.
But I want to know what you would think. What do you all think? That does that mean on a concrete in concrete terms? It sounds good, mm-hmm. but what does it mean in terms of how services are delivered and who has access to them and how they get access to those services?
Well, it means that we need to do a good job of public education and having early intervention and prevention programs that identify that there might be issues either with an individual person or within a family early on in the process, and that we reach out to them and address their needs in a culturally competent and respectful way rather than an intrusive way.
I might add to that, and I think that's quite correct. Mm-hmm. You know, these are concepts that we have known about for some time. These are not new. I worked in the mental health system in public as well as private. We've been trying to do that for ages. We have communities here that are, interestingly enough, are isolated. And, you know, this is a big city. But within that city, there are people who simply don't feel connected with any of these places, don't feel connected with family advocacy programs, don't feel connected with health programs. Even if we had connected programs, for example, in our health clinics, and we have community health clinics. We, you know, there are systems that are trying to do this, and I agree with you. We need much more public outreach and much more of that done because it's fractured. And at this point in time, of course, we have funding problems, and that really hampers things. But I will say this: we really, if I had my druthers, we really actually need more community advocacy people in the community themselves, mm-hmm. going if not door to door, community to community. We don't have enough of that. We don't have enough of that going on. And when we do that kind of grassroots, I think we might see a difference.
I'd like you all to join us here at 410-319-8888. We're talking about murders that have taken place in Baltimore City. On the heels of that, we've learned that two of the people who allegedly perpetrated these murders were mentally ill and looked for services, couldn't find services, and these murders were committed. Could that have been prevented? What are your thoughts about that? And I'm curious, perhaps you're a teacher, perhaps you're a social worker, perhaps you're someone who works with people trying to get people placed and helped and are being successful at it or cannot get them placed, people who experience it in their own families. We want to hear from you at 410-319-8888 and what you think can be done, should be done, and what your own experiences are. 410-319-8888. And you just heard clinical psychologist Dr. Grady Dale. Pardon me. Angela Lee is director of Baltimore City Office of the Maryland Coalition of Families for Children's Mental Health. And Steve Johnson is associate director of Adult Services Division of the Baltimore Mental Health Systems. And Grady Dale is also executive director, by the way, of Urban Psychological Services, which is where he does his work. 410-319-8888 is the number here. But I just wonder what you all think, I mean, has to change. I mean, how do we have huge portions of people who are incarcerated, who receive no mental health services, who need them, are barely diagnosed with issues and are hardly seen. You have kids who suffer the trauma of living in violent worlds. They are hardly ever dealt with, even on their own levels in schools. So, I mean, and where and how we get there. I mean, if you're working in these systems day to day, A, I'm sure, Steve Johnson, for you, it's a very frustrating experience, but then what changes that? I mean, what really changes that?
Well, I think Grady is correct when he said that a lot of what we know today, we've known for a long time. There is a lot of information and research and knowledge out there about effective work that we can do with people who have mental health issues. And there's a lot of work that we do at Baltimore Mental Health Systems to make those reality and have those be available to people in the city. And we need to just continue to do more of that and continue to see it as a public health issue and see it as an investment in our most precious resources, which is the people of Baltimore City, and to see that if we're not addressing everyone's needs, we need to find a way to have the resources available to expand the services that we know are effective and that we have programs available. Sometimes people have a hard time accessing them because there's not enough available. And yet, when you look at the statistics over the last few years, the amount of people accessing mental health services has increased. It's not all bad news. People are more and more accessing and being able to get good quality services, and we need to just continue to work in that direction.
Go ahead, and then we'll open the phones.
And another thing I think is we do have to continue to educate our families, educate our youth. We have to, get out there into the communities and meet our families where they are. A lot of times there's stipulations or we expect families to travel across town. Sometimes there's transportation issues. I just feel like we really have to do more getting out there and reaching out to our families and then having them to sit around the table as partners, not dictating to them what we feel they need, but have them at the table to express and explain to us what's going on with the family and what they feel their needs are. And I think we're moving along, but I think we have a job to do with placing families as equal partners around the table and listening to what they feel their needs are, and not only listen, but take their lead versus, okay, we're the professional professionals and we feel like we know. We need to take lead of families, because when kids, whether they're placed in a residential treatment center, whether they're receiving services into foster care, they're still going to return home to families. And the families need to be educated and equipped to handle what's going on when the kids return home to them.
Go ahead, then I'll open the phones
here. I was going to say that, interestingly enough, I certainly agree that there's more awareness out there, more than you think. Mm-hmm. My experience has been that even though there's been stigma out there among especially the kinds of populations that we serve in Baltimore City, I have felt a reach out from families who have hit brick walls. And I'm finding that families are willing to overcome some of the stigma because they get their backs up against the wall. You'd be surprised at the amount of families who are beginning to reach out for mental health services, more than you think. Mm-hmm. But there's still a lot of people falling through the cracks, and mm-hmm. that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Let's open the phones. A lot of people want to join in on this discussion here, but they have to say it this. 410-319-8888. WJ, you're on the air.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mark. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make a comment in regards to, the state ran into budget crunches about 12 years ago, and they start closing some of the mental facilities, the Crownsville for one. And what has effectively happened is that the criminal just became your mental health providers, which they are woefully inadequate in order to provide those services for the mental health. So that is a major problem. The criminal justice system, the prisons and the jails are loaded with individuals that have mental health issues, and they're not equipped to handle that type of client in the prison and the jail system. So that's one of the reasons why there's not enough referrals, there's not enough places to send people with those kind of problems. Just want to make that comment.
Great.
I think you're right. There have been some real problems in the system, especially in terms of funding. And you're absolutely right, the caller, that there's a lot of mental health cases wind up in the system. And whether it's at the adult level or whether it's at the juvenile level, I worked in the juvenile system. A lot of cases wind up in the juvenile system, and they just simply don't have enough resources and not enough services outside to transition many of these children and many of these adults into the mental health system. Now, I must say to you, that kind of access is real important, and sometimes it's missing, especially from the jails to the outside. And I think, I can't speak for the Department of Corrections completely, but I know in some instances they've been trying to make that connection. And I'm not quite sure they're making that connection the way they should make it. So people who come out of the jails, who go in the jails and then they come out with their mental illness are helped and helped in such a way that they won't commit crimes. May I say one quick thing, Mark? I want to make it clear to that if people make the connection between mental health and violence, and I want to say clearly that not all violence is because of mental illness.
Right.
And I have to say that, and I want to say that about that 19-year-old or anybody else, just because he was schizophrenic doesn't mean that if you're schizophrenic that you're subject to commit a crime because you're schizophrenic. I just had to throw that in.
No, I think it's important you said that. WJ, I do appreciate your comments. I think it's very critical. The question is, maybe we can explore in the course of the hour, is how we get to that place. What kind of system can be in place to actually help the mental health of people we institutionalize and follow them out so they have services once they leave? In this day of budget cuts and people kind of putting social programs in the rear instead of the front, it's a real problem. I'm curious how you all think we resolve that. But I think what you were just saying, Grady Dale, is really critical. Let me add to that and see if you all agree very quickly. Then we'll go to our next caller, which is that people look at schizophrenia as a violent disorder. But most schizophrenics are not violent.
That's correct.
That's right. The research indicates
this is really important for people to understand.
That people diagnosed with schizophrenia are no more violent than the general population.
That's right.
So I think that's that, because we have this idea that these, so I'm going to put that on the table. And your thoughts, folks, 410-319-8888. WJ, thanks for your call. And Jay, you're on the air.
Everybody doing?
Hi, Jay. Welcome. We're well.
This is a definitely very interesting topic. I just want to thank you for having it. And anybody who is currently working in this field and in this realm of work, people who are community advocates, social workers and so forth, even family members, especially family members, I just want to extend a word of encouragement to keep on supporting this group of people, because they are isolated, and there is a lot of assistance that's needed. And the encouragement and just the support of the family and the people who are actually still doing this work, I think, is missing, because it can be a very tiring and draining experience for people to work in this field.
Jay, you raise a really important point. Let me talk about the drain on the workers, but also the drain, Angela, your own sojourn came. You came into this field as an advocate because of your work with your own family.
Yes.
And the drain, that must have been draining for you. But talk a bit about how you got into this.
Well, how I got into it,
We have control of one thing, but that's time.
Okay.
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Caregiver of my late brother's four children, who I took care of them for at least 12 years, and that's how I started doing the work that that started my journey, I say. My family they had some mental health issues and a variety of issues that I really needed support with. And one thing that I agree with that I heard the caller say is isolation. A lot of times as a parent or guardian, you're embarrassed of some of the things that go on with your family, or you just kind of isolate yourself because you feel like no one understands, or if I tell someone my business, it may open up another can of worms. And that's why it's just really important to me to provide services to families, because actually I had an excellent team. I received wraparound service and some school mental health services and things like that, and my team was really good. And honestly, for the past 15 years, I'm not burned out. And what keeps me going is when I see a family that I have touched, or a family that I can walk in, we start out maybe a year. Sometimes it takes a month. Sometimes it takes a year to get what we actually want, but that keeps me going, and it's like medicine to me when I do what I do. So burnout, I can understand that in some cases, but with me, just I have drive and passion for what I do, because I know the benefit of having services for my family. And my kids now are adults, but I'm a grandmother, and I'm looking at some things for my grandchildren. So I just stress with family members the importance of continuing to do what you do, because it can be a struggle sometimes, and it can be really tiresome, but it's worth it on the other hand.
Let me ask a question that might seem crazy and hypothetical. Maybe that's crazy is the wrong word to use in this conversation. A hypothetical question that might be difficult to answer. Then we'll come right back to the phones. Kimberly, Tracy, Vivi, and Camera, you're the next three coming up. I'm going to come right to your calls. Is that the young woman who shot those two men on the step, who was 14 years old, she... Artisha Holt was her name. It was interesting when people talked about her not being a bad person, her friends talked about, that she had a lot on her mind. Kida was an above-average student in school who had a lot of anger issues, clearly, and acted out all the time in schools. Now, the question is, and I would ask when we have the school system folks on here in the next couple of days, ask them this question as well. So what happens to a student like that? When you obviously see a kid who is deeply in trouble, may be in need of more than just talk therapy, but clearly needs help. I mean, what would be the solutions that you would begin to offer this community and to the politicians who run this place, these governments, about how you address the problems that young people like Artisha Holfeld that might have prevented this horrible murder from taking place?
You want to ask that question? I could, but go ahead.
For me, I would want to approach her and start from where she is and try to understand what she's experiencing herself as best I can. If I were to run across her and feel that I had an indication that she was struggling with a mental illness or some other psychosocial problem in her life, I would want to have her explain it to me as best I can, and that be the initial engagement in trying to help her. Not so much me trying to diagnose her or tell her what her problem is, but really engage her and draw her into the process and have her have some control over the process so she feels like that the help that she's going to receive is really going to be from her point of view.
It's great. I want you to answer this question as well, and I'd like you to dive into it, but I'm going to throw a twist at you when you do this as well.
Right.
Supposing that this young girl was identified as a problem in a school.
Right.
Where would the school go to begin to work with this child? It's not going to happen inside the school.
Yeah. There are school-based mental health clinics.
That's right. But there are many.
There are many of them, yeah. But they're not in all the schools. And I agree with what you said before, that it begins with we talked about training programs in the schools to help make teachers more and aides more in tune with children like this. Okay. Even if you don't, even if you have wraparound services in the school, you have to have people who are in tuned. Okay, again, above and beyond mental health, we have to have functioning PDAs. Mm-hmm. We have to have functioning programs that involve kids in the arts and things like that. Now, I'm a mental health person. Why am I talking about art and basketball? Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of things that we can do. So we talk about the schools, and there's more work to be done in the schools. I think there's much more work to be done in the schools in terms of connecting with those kids, with the indigenous staff and the personnel that they have in those schools. Okay, if you do that, then you will probably cut down on some of the isolation, not all of the isolation, and that occurs when those kids walk in that school and walk out of that school.
Mm-hmm. That's a really important point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then we'll go back to the phones.
Okay, I'm sorry. And Mark, I was thinking about what you said when the family member said this child is a good person. She does well when she's, you know, just looking at her heart. And I think one thing that we really need in schools is staff that are willing to look past the behaviors of our children.
Which can be tough to do when kids are acting out in class and beating up other students.
Yes, but mm-hmm. The thing about it is it's something causing that. And when you meet a person, I always say to anyone, you always have to get past the behaviors and try to feel that person. And one thing that I would do is if I had met this young person is try to form a relationship. And a lot of times when folks, they're just reacting to the behaviors, they're not taking the time to form a relationship. Mm-hmm. And when you form a relationship with a person, you can really feel that person's heart and you can set the behaviors aside, so to speak, and just really get to know this person. And I feel like just forming relationships are so important versus focusing on your work. That's all I'm thinking about is work and addressing situations, which needs to happen, but we still need to really look at folks for who they mm-hmm. really are.
And Mark, a lot of times the people that do that are peers. Mm-hmm. And even in the adult mental health system, we're increasingly teaching people who have mental health issues to reach out to others who have mental health issues and work in collaboration with them to provide them support and services. Angela is an excellent example of a peer support person who does amazing work. And a lot of times having someone who has been there and understands the experience approach someone and work with them is a much more powerful connection.
And very quickly, we have to go to break.
I will add this. Hopefully, it's not a provocative statement. We need to be empathic and at the same time understand how we can hold children accountable for their responsibilities. That's a key.
And I think that and the reason I was pushing a little bit is we're losing some of our callers who are dying to get in this conversation, getting tired of waiting for it to get them on the phone. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We want to get you on the air with us, and maybe we'll have a chance to explore a bit when we come back from this very brief break. We'll go right to Kimberly in Baltimore, and I see Dante has called in. I think I know who that is, and I want to hear his thoughts as one of the most remarkable young therapists in our community and see what his thoughts are on this. And Cameron, we're going to come to your questions and thoughts as well. 410-319-8888 is the number here. As we go to break, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, the website is www.mecu.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. I want to remind you and say, attention, area jazz vocalists and musicians, you're invited to a historic photo shoot. A great day in Baltimore, Monday, September 13th, 9 a.m. at the War Memorial Plaza in downtown Baltimore. The photo shoot will bring together local and regional musicians in Baltimore's rich musical history, past and present, in support of jazz in the city. Proceeds from the photograph will benefit the UB Blake Cultural Center's jazz workshop programs. For more information, contact Mia Miata at 443-204-1730. That's 443-204-1730. We are joined by Dr. Grady Dale, clinical psychologist and executive director of Urban Psychological Services, Angela Lee, who is director of the Baltimore City Office of the Maryland Coalition of Families for Children's Mental Health, Steve Johnson, who is associate director of Adult Services Division of the Baltimore Mental Health Systems. And the number here is 410-319-8888. Let's go right to the phones. And Kimberly, you're on the air.
Yes. My comment is, I've been teaching for 21 years in the Baltimore City public school system. And my comment is this. I think we need to go back to family. We need to go back to, I'm over 50, and I remember sitting down, eating dinner together, learning morals and values, and I don't remember a lot of people having like mentally illness like they have now, and I think a lot of it has to do with we need African Americans. We need to go back to family, sit down, have dinner together with mother, with grandmother. If grandmother's not there, with mother, and so a lot of the students that I teach, I've been so many times to, they want me to adopt them. They want to live with me because I care about them and I show them love and I show them concern and I listen. And I think a lot of it is not mentally ill. I think a lot of, I mean, President Bush, look, he started a war. Come on, you know. Maybe he was mentally ill. I don't know.
Well, folks, I mean, what are your thoughts about that? On a couple of things that Kimberly has said, that mental illness doesn't seem like it was as deep and as prevalent as it was before, and it's issues of family. Grady?
Well, I think the caller is right, basically about family, and I agree with that. We of course have some problems in terms of how families are fractured. I will say that there were mental health issues 50 years ago and 40 years ago too. We didn't deal with it as we deal with it now. We didn't deal with it as in terms of bringing it up because there was a stigma attached to it. I think right now we have a lot of fractured families now. We have a lot of young fractured families now. And that is causing this whole business about mental illness and mental health and family issues to come up more than maybe it has in the past. It's not that we didn't have mental illness before. In some respects, we were a little isolated, but the call is right. We did have family. We did have families, and people had jobs, and people, their families seemed to be more intact. And we have certainly difficulties now in terms of families that are torn apart for a variety of reasons, and that spawns mental health issues and family issues and a lot of other problems.
Right. And a lot of the issues, I think that one of the things that the United Nations study showed is the fastest-growing disease, they put it, in the world is depression.
Yes.
And depression born out of poverty.
Yeah.
Not just the poverty exacerbating issues of depression.
That's correct.
And we can talk a bit about that. That could be a whole subject for another day. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Dante, you're on the air. Dante, you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It is Dante. Dante Wilson. How are you?
Thank you. Excellent, excellent show. I'm kind of hurt, Mr. Mark, because the other day I received a phone call from one of the youth I used to work at Dunbar. And he said, Mr. Dante, have you seen the news? And I said, no. And they explained to me the young girl that y'all was just talking about. And I recall the young girl being at Dunbar. And I recall this big fight that took place at Dunbar Middle School where you had about 30 girls, 15 on each side, and they were fighting, you know. And I recall the young girl being intervened with, and she was placed in a room. And this young girl fell to the floor in a fetal position. And I said, that's not just anger. That's beyond mental health. And so what I think about solutions. And of course, it was kind of hard because in Dunbar, you had different administration and different administration relieving and getting hired. But no one knew how to deal with the young lady. And then what ended up resulting was she was actually put out of school. So if she's put out of school, you have no contact with her, nor do you have contact with her family. When I think about mental health is only overwhelming stress and barriers and perils in people's lives in which they no longer have the coping skills to be able to deal with, nor do they have the resources to be able to assist and support them so they can rehabilitate and recover. And so when I think about solutions, And I hear everybody on the panel, and I love all the terminology. It makes me feel like I'm back in school with social work and things of that nature. But we needed family strengthening because children or young people, when they act out, it's the mimicking of the environment that they have assimilated or accommodated and became a part of. And so for us to really heal this young lady and provide some services to her, you have to service the entire household. You have to service that entire school because all of these factors put her at risk of what we've seen her just act out and do. I wish I could reach out to the family now. I'm actually making some calls because I know some of her relatives, and we're trying to reach out because I think the judge should really hear the big story, the big picture. It's unfortunate what happened with the murders and what took place. And I know our society, and I also know we're in a political season right now, and so, you know, state's attorney and different things of that nature. But as a community, we failed this young girl. We failed her family.
Well, Dante, you're raising some very important issues, and Grady is dying to kind of respond, so let me let him begin. The other guests can come in as well.
Yeah, I don't want to hijack Mark's show. I just have to give – I agree with Mr. Dante completely. I think he said that young lady was identified in the school, and that young lady fell down in a fetal position. Now, just there, if someone had identified that young lady right then and there and said this is – that fetal – what she did – was something that needed to be attended to, okay, rather than kicking her out of school. I get the impression that no one, very few people, even if they saw that, didn't connect with that, that was a problem when that girl got into that fetal position and said, now this is not something that's usual. We need to gather up this girl and deal with that. So we need to deal with it at the point of time that it happened. Apparently that did not happen.
So the question is, I mean, it's people who work in the system, I mean, it's in, well, directly and indirectly, right? So that why those innovations don't take place. I mean, how you could see a child in the fall down in a fetal position, or if a child just sat in the corner and held his or her knees and sucked their thumb when something like that happened and kind of withdrew like that, how that wouldn't be set off alarm bells that this child was in need of deep, deep assistance?
Well, I think our communities are feeling very overwhelmed. Our teachers are feeling overwhelmed. And so they don't have the training that they might have if we were in a better situation. They don't always feel like they're in a position to be able to act on if they do identify. And so, it's about education. It's about providing resources, providing information, providing an environment in which we are all committed to one another as people, and providing one another with the tools to help one another.
I hear that, and I don't disagree with that, Stephen, but I think sometimes, Angela, when I hear stories like Dante was telling, and Dante has been a guest on the show many times, I mean, what he's saying is, I mean, I hear what you're saying, Stephen, but I think that that's letting people get away with not addressing what they see, because sometimes things are just so blatant, you just can't ignore them.
Right.
But they were ignored.
And again, I feel like in that situation, the child's behaviors were focused on, I mean, the inappropriate behaviors that the school system would say, because she was in a fight. And looking at just that fight only versus this child is on the floor, she's in fetal position, and someone needs to go over and try to touch her. And find out what's going on and maybe do outreach to her family to see what, you know, if some assistance is needed in the home or the family needs to come in for a meeting to serve this child versus putting her out of school. If she was put out of school, she was put out of school because she was in an actual fight. So her real needs weren't even met.
You can combine holding somebody accountable for their behavior and at the same time say, and I want to help you so you don't have to get to that point again.
That's right.
And you can
do
both at the same time.
That's right.
And I think, we'll continue this in more subjects another day, because Lauren Abramson, who runs community conferencing.
Yeah.
If this system was on its P's and Q's, what they should have is a contract with Lauren Abramson.
Mm-hmm.
So when these things take place, massive violence taking place with 15 girls, or somebody like Dante Wilson is brought into the school with their programs to sit with these kids and work it through. This is the way we kind of can break things down, but
That's
we don't
right.
think like that.
That's right.
And we don't put our money there. We put it somewhere else. 410-319-8888, like wars we can't win. Let us go to Camera in Baltimore. You're on the air. Hi, Camera. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a very brief comment.
Sure.
Earlier on, you were talking about stigma. And I think in terms of reducing the stigma of mental illness, language is really, really important. And using person-first language is important. So instead of calling someone a schizophrenic, just say a person with schizophrenia, and really putting the person first and not the illness first. I think that can be really powerful in trying to eliminate some of the stigma.
Camera, what do you think about what Camera said?
I'm totally in support of that. The work that we do in the mental health system is really about identifying the whole person and not seeing somebody as only an illness, but really as a whole person just like you and me. My experiences in doing the work of working with folks with mental illness has taught me that over and over again, that I have more in common with them than not, and that they really have the same dreams and aspirations, the same challenges that I face. They have an additional challenge of struggling with a mental illness, but that's just one small part of who they are.
Let me ask this quick question, Stephen. Do you treat people, or is that what you did or do?
I've worked in the community mental health system for a number of years. I've worked at private nonprofits, working with people with serious mental illness. Now I'm working at Baltimore Mental Health Systems, and we're the core service agency for the city, responsible for the oversight and management of the public mental health system in the city.
Just curious, probe that a little bit further. 410-319-8888. Who is next? Cindy, you're next, and then Keith, and then Eric. Cindy, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I think this is a very important topic. I think that I've agreed with all of your speakers, as well as some of the calls that you've received so far that I've heard. But one of the things that I definitely agree on is that it is family that should be, you know, made to be a dominant part. And yes, unfortunately, we have a lot of young families. We have people, again, without jobs. But when these children, people are looking to children to be accountable, but to what extent? Because my thing is, if adults are not doing the right thing, how is a child supposed to do the right thing? We have all these politicians, we have all these actresses, and everyone doing the wrong thing, but yet you want to hold a child who has nothing, has no love, no starting point, but yet you want them to do the right because you should know better. But yet the adults are not doing anything. They're doing so much. You know, it's in the media. Yes, you can't, you know, make one person accountable to another, but, you know, we're expecting so much of these children who have nothing, let alone the children who are in families that have both parents have wealthy income and the parents are not even involved, and yet they seem to continue to sometimes get away with everything. And I feel my heart goes out for that young girl who killed. Yes, as horrible as it is, how unfortunate. But who helped her? I mean, who was helping? We want to keep looking to put these children in jail. That jail is not the answer. You know, how horrible the crime may be, but they have nothing that they've had to show them or to show, you know, to someone to give them a hug or to show them that there's another outlet to make their frustration. I guess I think that they put all these unfortunate things in school. We've taken away resources, physical education. I remember when physical education, we used to climb rope, jump over a horse, and now they run around and play a ball. Well, you can do that at home. I mean, we've taken away the arts. I mean, now that, you know, they've got this $46.8 million. I'm dying to see what they're going to do with that, even if they do put it in the inner cities, which I wouldn't mind them doing that. I'd rather, as a parent, because I'm able to pay, you know, to help out with my daughter's school, my children's school, that, you know, I would rather see the things going into these inner city schools that don't have any parents helping them to give these children an outlet to see that there's another side. I mean, it's just unfortunate, but yet we want to bring this racetrack here to bring more money. We want to, you know, pour into these streets that are still a mess. I mean, it's just a whole big overall. So I think that I'm really glad to hear that there are other people out there trying to do other things. But sometimes as a parent, you see these things going on, you feel alone, you try to do, you know, your best, but you don't see the politicians standing up to the game. The school systems, they only want to come to the aid when after it's been in the news.
Cindy, let's wrestle a bit with what you said, and I wanted to let you go on because clearly you needed to get that out, and I'm glad you did. But let's respond to what Cindy was saying.
Well, I'd like to see that young lady get in contact with Angela. I think
the young woman on the phone
to get in contact with Angela to harness that energy. I think I appreciate what the caller said.
Yes. I would love that.
How would she do that if she wants to get involved with the work you're doing?
She can give me a call at 410-235-6340. That's our office in Baltimore City. And then we also have a central office in Columbia. Numbers 410-730-8267. Serves families throughout the state. Would love to have you. We do support group educational workshops for families, one-on-one peer support, and we would be more than happy to connect with you.
Cindy, were you about to say something? So that,
I appreciate that.
Okay,
you're welcome.
Glad you called in. And so we'll have those numbers on our website. Is that 233-6430? Is that what you said?
410-235-6340.
6340.
Yes.
I have this dyslexic thing about numbers, but
no
I get
problem.
It now.
Mark, can I say something about crisis services in the city and just make sure that people are aware how to access mental health services in the city? We have a crisis system. We have a 24-hour hotline that's operated by Baltimore Crisis Response Incorporated, and they have services available within their organization as well as BCARS, which is the organization that serves children and adolescents, and there's a 24-hour hotline to access those services, which is 410-752-2647.
And we'll get that information from both of you. Again, our producers will, and put that on the website and attach it to the show so people can be involved and get some help if they need it as well.
Okay.
Great.
And in all this, I also remember that Jose Rodolfo Gonzalez Correas, who is the man who had a child and children who was working in this country to try to feed his family and people he left behind him in his village who was shot. Mm-hmm. And so in all this, even though I want to reach out to that young woman and wrap my hands around her and see if she can become a whole human being again later in her life, we can't forget what happened to Jose Rodolfo Gonzalez Correas and the family that lost him.
Agreed.
Yes.
410-319-8888 is the number here. And coming up next, Keith in Gardenville, you're on the air.
How you doing, Mark? It's a wonderful show. And
thank you.
I think your guests are doing an admirable job as much as they can do. But I'm just a little confused that are we trying to say that this young lady just suddenly went insane, or you know, this was just now she's only 14, but I mean that in these 14 years it's just been building up, building up, building up. I think personally, that she chose an easy mark two Hispanic gentlemen with the problem with assimilation to this country probably thought that anyway, and they didn't take it seriously because, you know, it got to come a point in time where, you know, when everybody want to wrap their arms around these juveniles, and I'm gonna tell you right now, they scare me. I ain't gonna lie to you. I'm not scared of adults anymore. The juveniles in this city alone scare me. And the reason why they scare me is because they're vulnerable to do anything just out of peer pressure. Now, if your guests can answer that question for me, how do you alleviate the peer pressure that's out here in these streets? Not just from the gangs, just from people in school or neighborhood people who are not affiliated with gangs. You know, how do you combat that problem? And now I'm hanging up.
James, thanks so much. That's a really important question here because people are scared of young people in the streets.
Thank you for that, for the call, what you said. All of the above. And what I mean by all of the above, this is a 14-year-old immature, troubled girl that very well could have picked an easy spot. And, so it's not that we should not say that, she saw this guy and she decided that she was going to take it out on that guy. That's probably the case. It's not one or the other. It's all of that. And she was a very troubled child that I don't want to use these terms too loosely, that perhaps, and I say perhaps, had an easy mark. That person was there, and she took it out on that person. So I'm not taking that away. But we also say she's a troubled person, and we have to deal with all of that. Now, for the second piece of that, Mark would say that we need another show to talk about gangs and what have you. So I'm not going to comment too much on that at this point, unless he wants to.
No, I think that what James said is also real. People are terrified of young people in the streets. The streets, I think, and this may be going on a limb saying this, but I think there is violence has always been with us, and humankind has always been titillated by violence. It's just part of humankind. But it's like in our face all the time now. And I think young people are saturated more with violence, daily violence, whether real in the streets or unreal or made up violence on TV and video games than ever before. So it's taken on, you know, a different tenor, I think, than it has in the past. And I think that's affected our children's behavior.
I agree. I live in Baltimore City, and I want to live in a safe community. And I feel sometimes like it's not as safe as I want it to be. What I think about violence is that it's generally born out of people feeling like they don't have choices. And it's usually underlying violence is pain. And so I usually look at violence as an unmet need, and that person or people need to be provided with an opportunity to voice that unmet need and get it met.
We are running out of time here, and I just want to say that, Angela Lee is director of the Baltimore City Office of the Maryland Coalition of Families for Children's Mental Health, and that number is 410-235-6340. I get that right?
Absolutely.
Thank
right.
You. And the hotline number that Steve Johnson, who is Associate Director of Adult Services Division of Baltimore Mental Health Systems, is 410-752-2647. And we'll put that on our website. I want to thank both of you and, of course, Dr. Grady Dale, clinical psychologist and founder and executive director of Urban Psychological Services, for being with us here and giving us your guidance and thoughts. It's good to have you all.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Enjoyed it.
We'll be coming back in just a moment. Remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And in the next hour, we're going to wrestle with the question of privacy and technology. You think you don't have prying eyes everything you do? Do we have protections for it? We'll discuss that in the next hour. Stay with us.